I sought her eyes with my own and entered.
The preceding stories are from Great Explanations, four lesbian stories written and read by Jackie Crossland and Nora Randall, taped distributed by Women's Press in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, everybody. Good evening to those of you who are parts of the world where it's night, good afternoon, and so on. You are tuned in to Culture in Motion, twice monthly show here on KBOO.FM, KBOO Community Radio, Portland, Oregon. Here we talk about the intersections between art, culture, politics, activism, music, and things related to those. And I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw. Our co-host, Ryan Danley, is with me. And tonight,
what's up?
Hey, today we have a very special guest, good friend of mine, artist, activist,
survivor.
Survivors, somebody I really admire, and I'm grateful to call a friend and comrade, Micah Fletcher. Micah, how you doing, man?
All right, man. I'm exhausted. The world is a burning sphere floating through a black void right now. Here we are.
That's different. How?
I have light. The difference is now the fire is blue color. Hotter than it was. Just red and orange.
All right.
Now we're really kicking in some fuel.
That was just getting to the hotter part. I got you.
Yeah, exactly.
The hottest part of the flame is the white part, though, right?
It's like the bluish, whitish. Yeah.
Like the border between the blue and the white?
Yeah. Like that little section right there is where...
Is that why the police are so angry?
Absolutely. I mean that and brown people want to be free, and like that just really pisses off people that are descendants from slave owners, so you know. I mean, I'm sorry, slave catchers.
Yeah.
They didn't even have the capital to own them. They just, you know, did the work, which almost makes it worse. In a weird, perverse way. It's like the working class eating itself as a job. But, like, that's the job.
So here's something that comes to mind. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about your art and how that might intersect with any activism you're involved in. But that said, though, you just inspired this thought and... It's something I think about often. People have been getting lynched. Racist vigilantes are driving their cars into crowds. And it reminds me of what's happened already in history. You know, the lynchings that happened in days past are just, you know, a former reflection of what's happening currently. And I always think to myself, some of these white people out here have to have relatives that might be involved.
Oh, yeah.
And how do we go about resolving this stuff without using the police? And that's just a question that comes to mind, you know, like I've had a couple white friends tell me that they have cops in their family, and they describe the kind of thinking that those guys are wrapped up in, and they think that Black Lives Matter are terrorists and all this stuff.
Sure. So, like, the short answer version, really, is that we need to attack policing as a position and not a person. Okay. Like, this is the dilemma with the country we live in. Corporations are literally people, okay? Why I bring that up is because what we do is we take something that is an object or a system or a group, and we personify it. It's like poetry, almost, in a way, right? Now, as a poet, my goal when I personify something is to get you to relate to it. Mm. So the whole reason that when these arguments are being made, whether it be on CNN or Fox or whatever, what they talk about is, well, not all cops are bad people, right? The reason they do that is to distract you from the fact that that's not relevant, even slightly. That has nothing to do with anything at all. In fact, quite frankly, the only people saying that are the people being brutalized by the police, okay? And that's a response to trauma. That's what you do, okay? Even though, and I don't know if this is controversial to say, but I find it ineffective because, and solely because, the real dilemma is that there is a position in society where a man or woman can be given a gun and a badge and the right to kidnap people, rob them, murder them, and really have almost no accountability, okay? And even if tried, found guilty in a court of law, and then prosecuted, that person can later go on to their union and utilize that to push back against it. It's one of the only times I've ever thought that a union was a bad thing. Like, one of the only times. So, that is all to say, the dilemma with those folks who have family members, that are, I have a family member that's trying to get into the police. I think he might already be in. I mean, and I won't lie to you, unlike whatever good cops there might be, like, my family member is kind of an ass. I won't lie to you. So, he fits the description perfect. But we have to remember that this isn't about them. Like, it's why I use the metaphor of, like, not the metaphor, but the description of, like, it's like a working class person whose job is to be a class trade. Okay? It's because, like, seriously, like, they are. Like, what, like, it, what, they're not building capital off nothing. They don't invest in stocks and just push paper and accrue wealth. Half of them are as broke as your average Joe at the end of the day. And they are forcing themselves into a position where they are putting themselves in traumatic headspaces constantly. Best case scenario is they make it home after the way it exists today isn't useful. And so, like, all I have to really say to them is, I'm like, is don't stop taking so personally. Like, this isn't about your cousin. This is about an institution that exists that needs to change. At minimum, change, if not be fully abolished. I personally believe it needs to be fully abolished, but at a minimum, bare minimum, we need to radically reform it to the degree where it's almost unrecognizable.
You know what? Sometimes, though, it is about your cousin. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, like, I hate to say it, but, like just because we have a personal relationship with somebody doesn't mean that it's that it takes it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm sorry that, like, our emotions are involved. You know, and like, we have to, like sacrifice this emotion, but, like, you know, but that's almost like coming from a point of, like, like, privilege, where I get to go, okay, well, this one's okay because it means something to me, you know? And unfortunately, the people on the streets, when the cop pulls you over, you can't go, well, there could be a good one, there could be the bad, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the fear of the bad ones just can never, you always will outweigh the, maybe the couple people it is. And so, like, you know, I just think it's really important for us, like, you know, from where I'm standing, if we have somebody we care about that's a cop, it's like, you know, good for you, but, like, sorry, you know, sometimes this is a tough situation. You know, you have somebody in your family that has chosen to fight on the side of the oppression, and as you said, like, and be a class traitor. And it's like, yeah, sorry. I'm sorry that sucks for you.
Sure. So, and to be clear, it's not to say that it isn't sometimes about your cousin. What I mean is that at this point, we're past that. Okay. Sure. It's kind of like white guilt, for instance, is something that irritates me because it's useless. I don't care that you feel bad. Do you think that my family members care that you feel, like, the people that raised me aren't benefiting from you feeling bad? Dust yourself off, go grab a shovel, start digging. No one cares about your feelings at this point. We're so far past, like, whether or not we are living in a healthy society. It's astonishing. It's appalling. Like, it's actually laughable at this point. That's how disturbing it is. Well, so for me, it's not a matter of, like, not acknowledging that, yeah, no, like, a majority of them, in my opinion, are naturally authoritarian human beings that have no interest in freedom or the concept of humanity and are probably about 3 years away from being a sociopath. It's just that it's not relevant to me. Like, I don't... That person is my enemy, whether they were a police officer or not. They are just a nationally fascistic person. I don't need to even acknowledge the fact that they're a cop. They're just a problem, period. But when it comes to policing, it's acknowledging that it's the structure of it, period. Like, whether you're even the best cop is still a cop, period. And that's the problem.
You know, what you're making me think of, and, you know, I'm sure some people are going to identify this as a very privileged thing for me to say, but as a worker, if I had a job that not only in my own opinion, in the opinion of those close to me, but in the opinion of a large sector of the population, which I identified with, culturally, intellectually, if I had a job that did damage to that community, and it was very clear, and it was front news, I mean, you know, front page headline, main story on the news, and it was something that I just couldn't avoid facing, I would just maybe get another job.
Yeah.
You know, most of us have worked in three or four different fields as adults, at least, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, and there's just so many ways to attack it from. But that's what sucks about situations like this is there's not enough time. There's just never enough time. But even the way we've structured policing now, like what people don't get is it still is bad. Let's say it's good. For the sake of your argument, whoever they are, let's say police are good. Okay, great. Do you know what the success rate is for murder cases? Yeah, and this is cleared cases, by the way. Not the people that don't get caught. These are the ones that get caught, which aren't even the real problem, right? So let's acknowledge that. The murder, the clearance case, according to the FBI itself, which, mind you, means that it's probably a fudge number anyways. So the fudge number is 50%. Mm. I think it's either 50 or 45.
Mm.
We call that an F in this country. I don't know if anybody remembers being in school, but that's called an F. That's called failure. You fail. You failed miserably, and you should feel bad about yourself. So even if you're saying that we should have cops, they still suck. But by their own definition, they can't do their own job correctly. Period. There's no art. There's nothing to. Like, that's what makes this conversation so frustrating. It's like, I'm not arguing with you, bud. You can either acknowledge facts or not. I don't care. I'm going to do what I'm doing. But that's fact.
Yeah.
I saw somebody online post. Well, what are you going to do if they defund the police? Who are you going to call if somebody steals your car?
Ghostbusters.
You ever see the cops come for a stolen car?
Like two hours later, one person shows up.
They
fill
out a form and they leave. I could have done it online. You know, I mean, it's not like half the things that we involve cops in, they don't even need to be there. Like,
yeah.
I don't need a guy with a gun who's going to shoot some people out to where my car ain't. You know what I mean? Like, I need, like... I just flatly need, like, somebody to fill out the form so I can tell the insurance company. It's not like he shows up and he or she shows up and they're like, oh, your car was stolen. Let's call out the people and put our detectives on it. No, they just tell, they fill out the form. What's the point? You know? So, I mean, yeah.
So Micah, you're an artist. When I first met you, I became acquainted with your spoken word. I've also seen you as, you know, play percussion live. You recently got into beat making. You're an MC. You're a hip hop artist. How does your art intersect with your political views?
So it's actually very interesting now that I'm thinking about it, because I'd say my methodology mirrors my ideology. So, like, for instance, I got into beat making. Why did I get into beat making? Because I'm not gonna lie to you, it's, at least at first, this is not fun. I'm not enjoying myself. There's a lot of knobs, levers, and things to figure out. It's because I need to I need to actually own the means of production. In this case, it would be literally called production. That's what it is, right? It's awesome that some people can keep doing this, but I can't keep spending $250 on beat. You're out of your damn mind. I make at best $16 an hour right now. I'm not going to be able to cover that. So let me take it back again. When I'm writing, there's actually a lot of research that goes into my writing. I try really hard to make sure that if I write a verse and I state something that is tangible and real, that it is backed up by facts, right? Somebody just analyzed the situation, looked at it, there's stats on it, there's some sort of anecdotal evidence or something, okay? Because in many ways, I'm finding, in a really odd sense of the word, I treat art the same way I imagine I would treat journalism. Like, I am trying to spread an idea to other people in a digestible way that they may not have previously been exposed to. You know what I mean? And that's a lot of why, in my opinion, it takes way too long for me to get anything done. It's just because I'm one of those freaks that has to do it right, whatever that means.
Yeah, I'd love to be able to make beats. That's a great thing to get into, and probably a lot of fun too. And like, it's probably just a good way to like just bury your head for a while.
Well, it also really forces you, at least with this genre of music, to learn your history. You know what I mean? Sampling is such a massive part of production, and in order to sample, you have to know what song sounds good. Like, what part of what song sounds good? So now all of a sudden you're rolling through like 30 years of soul albums, 20 years of reggae albums, 10 years of jazz albums, whatever, trying to find that one section where like Miles Davis played this really funky run in a solo, because you're going to cut that out and that's your melody. And then you're going through like the Burning Spear Marcus Garvey anniversary album trying to figure out which part of this drum section you want. It's really interesting. It's a weird process.
Probably my favorite Roots record. So to kind of change course here, as we're getting tighter on time, I don't think we can have you on without talking about the verdict that came down this week and all the charm he brought to the courtroom, continuing on his amazing exercise and ridiculousness. Would you like to speak about that to anything and how you're feeling? I know that you haven't been really able to talk about this much in the media since then, so here's an opportunity. So
I'm really grateful that the court case is finally done, because now I no longer feel, I already knew what the defense was going to be, like they were going to try to paint me as some violent activist that was on a trailblaze, you know, going after his freedom of speech or whatever, la-di-da, despite the fact that I'm like half a foot shorter than him and probably a few hundred pounds lighter. So basically how I feel is like this has been a perfect example on how to spend a lot of money wasting your time. It's great. I learned a lot, first of all, about how court systems work. Like, for instance, the facts are actually irrelevant. Even if you prove something, so for instance, there's a video of the stab. You have almost a 360-degree angle on what happened, especially if the FBI released the tapes they had, which for some reason wasn't shown in court. I don't know why, and I doubt we'll ever get a hand on that, but it's the direct cameras from the train. So you can see from the top down, from the sides over, that this happened the way it happened. Like, very clear. I didn't even remember it correctly. I thought I was the first person to touch somebody. No, Jeremy shoved me. I didn't do anything. Jeremy went for the lesion. I did something. He murdered me. He tried to murder me and then murdered two people. Okay. Very obvious. Doesn't matter. What matters is convincing 12 people who the entire reason why they are picked is because they are unbiased. What does that mean? It means that they didn't read about the case, and they don't really know much about it, and they can make a judgment call that is in accordance to the law, whatever that means, because it's actually rather vague. And technically speaking, they don't have to rule for the law. They can actually just say, yeah, he did something illegal, but we don't care. And what is that called? Jury nullification. They can just say, yeah, no, he did it, but we're still not convicting him. And you can go kick rocks. So, like, essentially, it's a play. But that's what it is. It's a performance. This is how we run our country. The fates of millions of people are decided every day by what is, for lack of a better term, a vaudeville act. Okay, so that was one thing. The other thing I realized is just how very clueless we are as to why things happen in the world. Because the most disturbing part for me about the case was the way that he as a person was reported on, as if he was some big, like, horrifying terrorist that was directly connected with the Klan and was had a like a 3-month process built up on how he was going to destroy like a bunch of people on a train. It had nothing to do with anything. The man was incredibly ill mentally, in my opinion, and was clearly a drunk. Why that's important is because that means he did all of that racist madness implicitly. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't something... I'm sure he, to some degree, knew what he was doing was wrong and racially motivated. But in his mind, it wasn't that big of a deal. And it begs the question, well, where does that come from, right? And the answer, very clearly, is us. It comes from us. It comes from my city, the teachers in it, the adults within it. Somehow, nobody down the road showed him that the world we live in is broken, and in fact taught him that this white supremacy that is the methodology with which we govern, dictate laws, dictate the way events run, etc., 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 is not only acceptable but a virtue. And that, combined with being shot in the face by a cop, it didn't go through his skull, but it ricocheted off and grazed it, which would still be enough for force to do brain damage, plus being shoved into the cycle of homelessness to prison to homelessness to prison so that he could make, I don't want to think about how many dollars for the local government. I mean, to be just to be blunt and clear about it, the state created a monster, didn't put it in a cage, and then it killed a bunch of people. That's what happened. Yeah. And it is. We have the study. We know what putting in people in prison over and over again does to them. We know what not teaching children real history does to them. It's not a surprise.
So for those of you who might have just tuned in, we didn't do a proper intro when we opened this section of the conversation. Some of you might not know about the trial of Jeremy Christian, and that's who we're talking about. He was just convicted and sentenced to do natural life. That means he's not going to get out of prison while he's alive. That conversation in and of itself is a whole other thing. You know, Micah, you talked about what you just described, some might view as having compassion for Jeremy Christian, the man who murdered two people and attempted to murder you. And sure. In fact, almost killed you when he stabbed you in the neck. Sure. Because you describe a societal set of conditions as the catalyst for the way he behaved on the train. Mm-hmm. So we're right now in the midst of national rebellion, insurrection, uprising, protest, demonstrations against police terror. Police violence in the wake of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and finally George Floyd. In the wake of it, we've seen more murders. Police are murdering people who aren't getting as much attention as those three that I mentioned. They're responding to the protests with escalated violence. And there's an unsafe environment in which vigilantism is happening. And we have to wonder if police are going to do any so-called police work to resolve some of the vigilante violence, people driving their cars into protesters, people shooting in the crowds, and so on and so forth. I'm seeing links between this conversation about abolition versus reform, and how that relates to the police force, as well as in how it relates to the prison industrial complex.
It's because it does, directly. It is interesting. People don't bring this up, and I don't know why. Or let me rephrase, people have not brought it up when I've had conversations with them about it. Okay. When we refer to police terrorism, that would imply that to some degree, the police are terrorists. Now, an interesting thing about terrorism is that when you're talking about terrorism, it breeds more terrorism. Okay, like there's direct correlation. It's why when we talk about the imperialistic army that is the United States Army, as much as I have a skewed opinion on the troops, this goes more towards compassion, and that's something I've been dealing with for a long time. But like when we bomb, carpet bomb entire cities and entire countries, that is how you breed terrorists. Okay. To some degree, this is the same way policing works. When the cops think it's cool or acceptable or necessary to shoot someone that's running away, that's how you get violent people.
Okay.
Because they want revenge. Like, all of this crime we worry about is not just due to the society we live in, that being one that values capital over people, but it is also due to the way that we authoritarianly force that system upon people. By that I mean the police. You know, if you're constantly afraid that some stranger with a gun is gonna come into your home, take all of your stuff, and remove you from it because you're late on rent, you're probably a lot more likely to do some crazy stuff in order to avoid that happening. Or at least I know I would, right? All of these problems that the media and that our elected officials portray as being problems that are moral are actually products of the way we run things. And so the dilemma that I have is that I actually want it stopped. Like, I'm not, like, this isn't about morality for me. You can't undo hundreds of years of genocide, violence, and the destruction of culture. You can't. There's no apology you're going to give that fixes that. What you can do is stop it. And the only way to stop that is to change the way that things run. This is a dilemma. It's the reason why I sound compassionate when I talk about Jeremy. It's the reason why I talk about cops the way I do, is because, quite frankly, I don't, the people, not relevant to me. You're going to get yours. Like, that's what the cops don't get. I've never called the cops. Because, listen, if somebody hurts me and I feel the need to retaliate, I'm probably going to. I'm not going to ask someone else to do it. If I need to defend myself, I'm just going to do that. I'm not going to ask for permission, okay? I believe in actual freedom. What was the point?
You're talking about abolition.
Right. So, like, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, like, I'm not super interested in these talks about reforms or, well, what about the good police officers, or, well, he's a monster, la-di-da. No. I'm about cutting the weeds out of the garden by the root, okay? I want the roots gone. That's how you get rid of problems like this. I want the system of policing gone. Mm-hmm. I want it gone. I don't know if that's what we're going to do. That's what I'd like. Mm-hmm. At a bare minimum, I want it gutted to the point of being redundant at a minimum. At the end of the day, I don't really care what happens to Jeremy. He was probably going to die violently anyway. I want whatever made him to be gone.
Right.
Whatever the combination of poverty and a lack of education and police brutality, in my opinion, whatever that is, that equation that equates to what a Jeremy is, I want that gone. I don't care about Jeremy. He's probably going to die alone and without a single friend to his name. So I'm not worried about that. He's going to get his. I've learned that over my lifetime. But that system, it's got to go.
Yeah.
That's what I'm interested in.
Man. Well, you know, you don't have to.
Oh. Fighting for survival is such a boring battle. Wanna get into my car, I wanna drive out to Seattle, where the used record stores have much better prices. But I don't have a car, and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me? I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4, and the condom that's still in there that has probably expired. I'd leave home for New York, but New York is where I'm from. I'm just looking for a way to feel my life has begun. Living in the city where I'm working like a walrus, but man, I don't need your money, man, I'm gonna be an artist. And I'm feeling like I wanna do whatever I feel inside. I put it all on paper and I'll hope that people buy it. And my only minor worry is how to pay the rent, but that won't even matter when I lose my apartment. And I'll really have no worries, I'll be just like a cassette that you've taped up the tabs of to put something new on it. And when I hit record, God only knows what I will be. And if there is no God, then it's a better mystery. Fighting for survival, and I guess I must be winning. And my story is so long, I can't remember the beginning. Am I an optimist or am I a pessimist? If I see that half full, half empty cup is half full of nothingness.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.